Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, the first day of June. Welcome, 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 friends, on into the program. I'm Cherry Gregg.
First day of June.
I know.
Ah!
Time is flying.
Oh, Lord. I really feel it this time. I can't believe we're almost halfway through the year.
I can't believe it either.
Anyways, that's not what the show is about today. Today, we start with a question. Should the wealthiest Americans pay more in taxes? If you ask that question to Americans, most would say yes. That's what the polling data shows. And we're seeing some states act on that polling data. Massachusetts recently enacted a new wealth tax. California's considering one. There's a proposal at the national level, among many other proposals. So what are the consequences of wealth taxes? Do they actually chip away at wealth inequality? Are they kind of just a way to paper over the real issues? We're going to explore those questions and more today on the show. We're asking you, very simply, should we impose a national billionaire tax? Why or why not? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the live chat.
Yeah, I'm so interested in what our listeners have to say, because we have so many more billionaires than we did like 40 years ago. So
way more.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a lot of questions around that. What should we do with this class of people? Again, 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. Should we impose a national billionaires tax? Why or why not? Looking forward to hearing what you have to say. We have our trio of news stories.
Let's start.
Yeah, unrest near Delaney Hall, the immigration jail in Newark, New Jersey, continued over the weekend as a curfew went into effect. According to NJ.com, hundreds of state-led police officers in riot gear detained several people Sunday who refused to leave the protest zone after the 9 p.m. to 6 a.m. curfew went into effect. Video and posts to social media show police on horseback wearing riot gear surrounding protesters. Take a look, listen. Reporters say around 10 p.m. authorities sent media away from the protest zone, which is a half mile zone around that detention center. Law enforcement rolled in militarized armored vehicles as a police bus rolled in and issued warnings in the hour leading up to that curfew time. Governor Mikey Sherrill, she is defending the deployment of state police, saying they were sent in initially to create safe protest zones, but things got out of hand when demonstrators started throwing projectiles and breaching the barrier around that building. Here's the governor talking about this over the weekend. Take a look, listen.
Let me be clear. Violent, chaotic clashes hurt everyone. They put the lives of both protesters and law enforcement in danger. They take the focus away from people inside Delaney Hall and their families. And they raise the temperature with ICE. I will ensure public safety, and I refuse to give ICE an excuse to surge into our communities. That would make the situation more dangerous and put more New Jerseyans at risk. It's time to bring the temperature down.
Yeah, and this has been going on. The temperature has been rising, rising, rising over the past week plus. And Governor Mikey Sherrill, she said she actually preferred having trusted state police intervene rather than having the feds come in and sort of tamp down the temperature. So this is the outcome.
And this has become a national flashpoint.
It has.
And, you know, we saw earlier protests around DHS and ICE. A lot of it had to do with the apprehension of people. These protests are really focused on the conditions of detention itself. And it's put that issue front and center. We're actually going to talk about that more broadly on tomorrow's show, in part because of these protests in Newark, New Jersey. So it's, in some ways, it has had that effect of refocusing the conversation around the conditions of detention, which is something that, from my perspective, had been a little lower on the priority list in the earlier days of the Trump administration.
Yeah. People want to know what's going on. They're allowing visitors in to this detention center now, but people had a lot of questions around transparency, and that is a lot of what we'll talk about tomorrow on the show.
Yeah. Moving now to story number two, bringing it back to Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. The Inquirer analyzed census data to see how median household income is changing in different parts of Philadelphia. They looked at the period roughly from 2014 to 2024, so about a decade. The biggest jump in median income was in the South Philly neighborhoods west of Broad Street, such as Graduate Hospital, Point Breeze, and Grays Ferry. In those segments of the city, median household income doubled.
Wow.
It's now $96,000. That's adjusted for inflation, by the way. The next biggest jump, you might have guessed this one, was in the neighborhoods just northeast of Center City, Northern Liberties, Fishtown, Kensington. And the median income in that swath of the city is actually now higher than Center City, which surprised me a little bit.
Wow.
Almost all neighborhoods in the city saw inflation-adjusted income go up. Some areas, however, the city a little bit more stable, northeast, kind of a flat line. There was one part of far southwest Philly that was the lone exception. Median household income dropped slightly. But it's an interesting map to look at that the Inquirer put out there. You can kind of see where gentrification essentially is happening at the highest scales and places where there isn't as much socioeconomic change in the neighborhoods.
Yeah, I mean, I looked at the neighborhoods where the incomes have gone up, and it kind of tracks with the hottest Philly neighborhoods.
Yeah,
remember
for sure.
From a few years
for
ago? And Fishtown, Point Breeze, Graduate Hospital, all areas on that list where there was a lot of outside investment. And you saw professionals sort of rushing in. And they're all like really close to eds and meds, you
yes.
know, hospitals and research centers. And so they're very convenient for these folks, and they have good jobs. The downside is that long-term residents then have to deal with, you know, stark increase in property value and higher taxes and stuff like that.
And oftentimes renters, too, are the most vulnerable.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's the ring around Center City where you're seeing the biggest jumps in median household income and a lot of the development. Like you said, a lot of it is proximity to eds and meds. Mm-hmm. Some of it, I think, is also just
which
like
was
Center City.
Jobs, too. Yeah,
for sure. And Center City maybe a little bit more built out, and there was sort of more opportunities for development in that ring around what they call greater Center City or close in West Philly, right?
You're 10 minutes from everything. Love it.
Yeah, exactly. Would you be 10 minutes from Belmont Plateau? Well, some parts, I guess, of greater Center City you might be. So let's get to the third story now,
Yeah, Jared. After a really rough, nearly disastrous 2025, the 18th annual Roots Picnic went down at the Belmont Plateau over the weekend. And from the looks of it, it was a bona fide hit.
The
in
picnic
Philadelphia
is back, folks.
It is back.
B-A-C-K back.
With a big B and a big A and a big C-K.
All the letters are big.
Big. A big part of it was Jay-Z. I mean, who hadn't headlined a show in half a decade. And he came out Saturday night minus his dreads, had a new fro. And he was backed up by the Roots, and he did not disappoint. He performed all of his hits and within minutes dropped a freestyle that lit up social media.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this. And I'm a loser.
Look, and he took shots at Drake, Nicki Minaj, Kanye West, among other people. My social media was lit up with shots of T.I., Brandy, among others. Erykah Badu headlined the second day. So you have Jay-Z the first night, Erykah Badu the second night. And we have a clip of her because she was in Philly with her shoes off, checking out our grass in Clark Park. And she said, Philly has the softest grass in the world. Look at her.
She's loving that grass.
She's loving that grass.
That's in West Philly.
I know a lot of people were like, I wish I was there.
you know what's funny? I was there, but I didn't see her. I was in Clark Park on Sunday.
Yeah.
With my family and some friends, but we were in a different part of the park. I just didn't see her.
Yeah, and she was out there. She said, we have great electrons, you know, in our grass. So there you go.
I agree.
But I have to say, Avi, I mean, I've gone to like half of the Roots picnics over the years, including the very first one back in the day.
You're an OG.
And I'm an OG, and I am hurt. I am hurt deep down in my soul that I did not go this year because I mean, everybody was like, it could end this year. That's how good it was.
Yeah. And I'm going to give you some space because I know you're hurting today.
I am.
And you have some FOMO, some regret. but this is a good thing for Philadelphia.
It
because
is.
Because it did seem like the Roots Picnic was not on the downswing, you would say, but like maybe a little vulnerable.
Because
last year didn't go so great. And to see it just resurge this year, make so many headlines. Like I said, even I heard about that Jay-Z freestyle.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't even know he was beefing with all those people. And I don't know why. But
now you know that beef exists. You heard the thing, though.
Absolutely. And just want to say shout out to Erica Badu. Yeah. Thank you for praising our grass.
We do have good grass.
Didn't even know we had, like, I didn't appreciate our grass.
You've been taking it for granted, man.
And it sounds like we're talking about marijuana. And I just want to tell folks, we're not. We are literally talking. She just says we have really good grass.
She had her
physical grass that grows out of the ground.
And by the way, shout out to Jay-Z, because he used to do the Made in America Festival. And we talked about this a little bit.
Yeah.
And he had his own thing. And now he sort of like came over to the Roots side. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. And we love the Roots. Shout out to the Roots always. And the Roots of the grass, which again, is excellent here in Philadelphia.
And we're not going to take the grass for granted anymore.
Thank you. Thank you. This is Erica Badu, by the way. Thank you for taking us out on this music. Producers, on the other side of the break, we're going to talk about wealth taxes. Get your thoughts in to studio2 at whyy.org and don't go anywhere.
And welcome back to Studio 2 here on WHYY. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. How much is too much? As America's billionaire class grows, that question is reverberating in legislative chambers. Massachusetts recently enacted a new tax on the wealthy. California is considering one. And Senator Bernie Sanders introduced a bill in Congress that would take the concept nationwide.
Yeah, polling suggests wealth taxes are popular, but critics say they're the financial version of scapegoating, substituting populist anger for real solutions. They argue that billionaire taxes will only lead to billionaire tax dodging. If you want a big social safety net, you need broad-based taxes on everybody to actually afford it.
So today on the show, we go deep on wealth taxes. What are they? Do they work? And will they actually make society more fair? We'll pose those questions to our experts. Adam Michel is the Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. He was formerly Deputy Staff Director at the U.S. Congress Joint Economic Committee. Adam, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me on.
And let me also welcome Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies and author of Burned by Billionaires. Chuck, it's nice to have you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Avi and Cherry.
Yes, and for you, our listeners at home, on the road, or elsewhere, we'd love to hear from you as well. Our question of the day is, should we impose a national billionaire tax? Why or why not? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on Facebook and YouTube, you can put your comments in the chat.
So one, I think, commonly accepted fact, as we, before we get into the opinions here, Chuck, is that there are more billionaires today than there used to be. So I want you to explain why you think that is, and whether we should be concerned about that trend, or why we should be concerned about that trend.
Yeah, we are seeing a steady growth, not just in billionaires, but I would say the concentration in wealth and power, not just among the 1%, but that top 0.1%. We're kind of living through a second gilded age. 100 years ago, we had this extreme inequality coming out of the Industrial Revolution, and that distorted power. So part of the reason why we need to have a wealth tax, and not just on, I would say, on billionaires, but that top 0.1%, is because they have so much power. The power to distort democracy, to capture our political system, to undermine the quality of life for the rest of us. So,
and why did
really,
this happen, Chuck? Why do you believe this trend developed?
Well, really, coming out of the 30, 40 years after World War II, we actually grew together as a society. The bottom fifth, the middle fifth, the top fifth, they all rose at roughly the same level. The racial wealth divide was beginning to narrow. The income gap was narrowing. But starting in the late 70s, lawmakers and policymakers started to change the laws, tax policy, trade policy, in a way that launched decades of growing inequality. So we're living today with a state of extreme inequality, but it really was because the rules of the economy have been changed to funnel wealth to the top and keep wages low and flat. And that's been the underlying story of the last four decades.
Adam, I want to get your take on why there are more billionaires today than there used to be, and whether you see this as a problem to solve or an outgrowth of something that's actually positive.
Thanks. Yeah, I think this is something that we should celebrate. The increase in the number of billionaires and of people with wealth in general in the United States and around the world is the product of them providing more goods and services to a larger share of people. And they actually are able to claim just a small share of the total value that their businesses are creating for consumers here in the United States and in every other country that they serve. That billionaires are not holding anyone back. In fact, everyone has been made well better off over time. Just in the last decade, wages for the bottom 10% of wage earners in the United States have grown faster than those at the top. And so there is no systematic holding down of people. But at the end of the day, wealth is good, and we should celebrate people that create it, because that's what that wealth is. Are the businesses that employ us all and that own the most of the housing stock and innovate all of the new drugs and products that we look forward to each and every day.
Adam, quick follow up for you: is there a point that you think income disparity or wealth could become something that is problematic?
I think we should think of this as why is wealth being concentrated? If it's being concentrated because the government is putting their thumb on the scale and giving monopoly privileges to, or putting in a regulatory framework that is allowing wealth to concentrate in like happens in places like Russia and China, places where the state is very involved in the economy and the people that are connected to government are the ones that get ahead. I think that should be concerning. But the answer is to remove government barriers and let the market step back in. If the wealth is accumulated because people are building businesses that are delivering things to people more efficiently and creating drugs that allow people to live longer, healthier, fuller lives, that is not a problem. That is something that everyone benefits from. And of course, wealth is going to be accumulated for coming up with and implementing those ideas.
And Michael on Facebook says most of these billionaires have their wealth in stocks and know how to beat the system. And so, Chuck, I asked Adam about where that line is, where things get a little bit out of hand, and you sort of touched upon it and you talked about this concentration of power. I'm wondering, we heard that. What rules do you think are in place right now that sort of open the door to this concentration of wealth and to hear you say it, also a concentration of power and influence?
Yeah, I disagree with Adam that I think we've crossed a very dangerous line, that the concentration of wealth and power is distorting the free market. It's distorting economic policy. It's distorting our political system. It's not, it's nothing wrong with the individuals. It's a system where, and again, the rules are tax policy. Tax policy is a huge one. So multimillionaires, high income earners pay high taxes in our society. But if you are a billionaire with huge amounts of wealth, you actually have all kinds of ways to opt out of paying your fair share of taxes. I looked at how is this affecting healthcare? How is this affecting democracy and the environment? These concentrations of wealth and power are distorting everything we care about. We have crossed a line. And I would agree with Adam that government policies are part of that, but it's often because the powerful billionaire class have worked to rig the rules to get more wealth and power.
Give an example. I would love to. I'd love for you to give like a concrete example, Chuck, and then maybe we could have Adam respond to that, of where you see sort of like we're talking about this line, right, where you have amassed so much wealth that you can distort the economic system, make it less free and fair, and in a way just to increase your own power. You're saying we've crossed that line. Adam's saying he sees that in other countries, not as much here. I'm just, if you could give an example and then maybe we could go back and forth on it a little bit.
Sure. One example is what's happening in our healthcare system. We're seeing billionaire-backed private equity firms move into every corner of the healthcare system. They're purchasing hospitals, veterinary care for animals. They're kind of creating, reducing competition in that space. Tax policy, though, let me give you a very concrete example. We have an inheritance tax. It's called the estate tax. It's a tax
on the inherited wealth of multimillionaires and billionaires at the end of life when it transfers. For the last 30 years, that tax has been so under attack by the wealthy, by the billionaire class, it has become a joke. So we have an income tax. We have an inheritance tax, which supposedly slows the dynastic accumulation of wealth. We need to have a healthy estate tax and a wealth tax. Those three things together are rules that the wealthy have blocked, use their power to block meaningful protections and meaningful taxes on the wealthy themselves, effectively shifting taxes onto everyone else.
So, Adam, let me ask you about something like that. So that this, it's really about inheritance, right? The idea that the people that inherit wealth are not generating value. They're just getting wealth from someone who generated value and then hoarding it. And so there's really no benefit to the rest of us. And there is this sort of gut inequality that we have to sort of wrestle with. I'm curious how you look at something like taxing wealth as it transfers from generation to generation. Do you think we should not do that? Do you think there's some merit to that? Just as an example.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if you look at the like Forbes 400 list, for example, if you go back to the 1980s when the list started, there's only about 13 people that are still on that list today. And that what that tells you is most wealth in the United States is built. It's not inherited. And so this idea of inheritances creating this class of people that just sticks around forever to dominate politics, I think is just incredibly overstated. And most wealth comes from ongoing enterprises, but even inherited wealth is still reinvested in the economy. A lot of people think that wealth is a gold bar sitting in someone's closet, but almost all of the wealth that's owned by Americans in general, not just the top several percent, is invested in ongoing businesses, in their houses, in rental units that other people are living in venture capital for businesses that may or may not make a profit ever. And so so anytime we talk about taxing that stock of wealth, we are talking about stopping some portion of what all of those funds are invested in. And so I would much rather tax consumption or the flow or any sort, any beyond wealth, any flow of income or annual consumption, instead of going after the stock of investment that is actively employed in productive businesses.
Yeah. Let me read a couple comments. George on Facebook says we need to continue a progressive tax system and we need to make it less vulnerable to gaming that system. Ruth from Chester County says, yes, billionaires and high millionaires should be taxed at higher rates. They are dodging now. Pay attention to Trump's suit against the IRS. Again, we'd love to hear from you. Should we impose a national billionaire tax? Why or why not? The number to call is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And for our streamers on Facebook and YouTube, you can leave a comment in the chat. And so, Chuck, I wanted to sort of ask you, can we sort of level set? Because many billionaires, and we talked about this, they derive much of their wealth from stocks and assets that increase in value over time. We talked about that. And because the tax system primarily taxes income rather than these unrealized gains, some wealthy Americans can legally pay lower effective tax rates than many expect them to do. So a lot of people look at these billionaires and they're like, I'm paying 35%, you paying 24%. It doesn't seem fair. And so can we sort of level set a little bit and really just have an understanding of how much tax these billionaires are actually paying, and are they really dodging?
Well, it's a great question. One of the challenges is that when you're a billionaire, you have a whole armada of financial planners and tax attorneys, I call it the wealth defense industry, who work on your behalf to kind of play these shell games and move money to the shadows, move money offshore, move money to South Dakota to the trust industry there. So we don't really know how much wealthy have. And I agree with Adam, wealth is a good thing. And it's a good thing for, I would say, 99.9% of the population. But when it sort of crosses above that, I say 50 million mark, it's no longer just another house or another boat. It's a senator. It's a newspaper. It's influence and power. And that's when we should sort of wave the red flag and say, not all wealth is a positive thing when it is so such a source of power.
I think this point about the power of wealth is an interesting one. And I think it's often overstated in that even billionaires don't have homogenous political views. The sort of 10, I think the 10 richest members of Congress are about half Republican, half Democrat. You look at Soros and Steyer fund the left and Adelson's funds the right. They're canceling each other out more often than they are pushing in the same direction. The famous economist Stephen Levitt found that campaign spending isn't necessarily associated with one economic class coming out ahead over the other. Even individuals, where Trump in 2016 spent about half of what Hillary Clinton spent, or Michael Bloomberg spent $1 billion of his own money and won American Samoa at the end of the day to win the Democratic primary. And so while I certainly don't want the government giving favors to anyone, I think it's overstated that we have this problem where one sort of income class is dominating politics in one systematic direction. We see more often that there's still sort of competing.
But even if it wasn't partisan, Adam, it could be used to wield influence and further their own like privilege or wealth accumulation, right? So that's somewhat separate than the partisan direction of their spending. If it could be, do you worry, I suppose, that it could be used to change the rules of whatever industry they're in, or to change the tax code to further cement their wealth accumulation or their status? I think that might be closer to what Chuck was driving at than necessarily driving us left or right. Just wanted to give you a chance to respond to that.
Yeah, no, I thank you for the clarification. I think that on the tax side, there's, in my view, there's not a lot of evidence that billionaires are systematically manipulating the system to pay lower rates than everyone else. There was a Treasury IRS study that came out under the Biden administration that shows the wealthiest 92 billionaires in America, the very top of the income distribution, pay effective tax rates of about 60% when you take into consideration federal, state, and international taxes. And so when you poll people and say, like, do you want billionaires to pay higher taxes? Most people are under this false assumption that they're not paying high taxes in the first place. The other piece of that is sort of outside the tax code you mentioned in other industries. Like Chuck pointed to the healthcare industry as a place that rules may be being manipulated so that power can be concentrated and wealth can be extracted. But the healthcare industry is a place where the government is way too involved in the first place. We started with Medicare and Medicaid and then the ACA. These are all massive government interventions with trillions of dollars of government spending flowing into this industry. And so it is the furthest thing from a free market that I could conceive of. And so I don't think we can look at the healthcare industry, for example, and say this is a market outcome. Instead, we should be looking at how do we get the government out of the way. And there I'm with Chuck. If billionaires are lobbying for additional government intervention in these sectors so they can become wealthier, by all means, let's stop that government intervention. But we shouldn't turn to the tax code first to fix this problem. We should be first fixing all of these places where the government is entangled with private industry on the subsidy and regulation side.
And so, read a couple comments. Itzik says, it's great that we have billionaires, but the tax rate used to be much higher. And Gary says, you're asking the wrong question. The right question is, how do we successfully tax the rich in Pennsylvania and nationally? And so, Chuck, I wonder, like, how did things change? Because did billionaires used to be taxed at a much higher rate, and now things have sort of gotten to a place where they're able to, hide things and not pay their fair share? And then we'll move on to what it would look like if we were to tax them more, and the pros and cons of that. So how did things shift? Because they used to be taxed differently.
That's right. Yeah. As my U.S. senator says, under the socialist presidency of Dwight Eisenhower, the ultra wealthy paid much higher tax rates. Obviously, Dwight Eisenhower is not a socialist, although today he might be considered one by some people, because we had this incredibly progressive tax system, an income tax, a robust inheritance tax. We didn't have a wealth tax, which is what we're talking about today. But there's no question. We know from the leaks that have happened, the Panama Papers, the leaks that ProPublica has covered, billionaires have found all kinds of ways to opt out. And it's not just these individuals. Like I say, they hire whole teams of professionals to help them, and they rate and measure their success by how low they can get their clients' taxes, how much they can move to the shadows into trusts, what people call dynasty trusts, outside the reach of tax, how much they can pass on to the next generation tax-free. That's how they measure their success. So the reason why you mentioned the polling data about taxing wealthy, people know that the rich have been gaming the system. They see it. They know that it's changed. They see that their tax bills are going up at the state and local level as we shift taxes off the feds onto state and local, off of wealth, onto wages. So it's pretty almost common sense, I think, that billionaires are not paying anywhere near their fair share of the tax obligations.
Let me follow up, Chuck, and ask you this, because we have a couple comments. They're somewhat similar. Sean says, yes, unreasonable wealth hoarding should be met with undodgeable taxes. Max says, I'm all for taxing the wealthy more. The only way this is feasible is to have a coordinated treaty with other nations imposing the same rate. Those countries who don't agree can't trade with those who do. Both of these comments get to the idea of how do you actually do it? Because I have to imagine that all of the dodging mechanisms that you laid out there, Chuck, they are responses to past attempts to collect tax revenue from the wealthy. So this gets into the idea that there's always going to be some sort of diffusion and trickle-down effect when you try to tax this wealth. So then how do you do it so that you don't end up with a new generation of tax maneuvers?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that coming out of World War II, we did effectively tax the wealthy at much higher levels. And I come back to taxes is kind of an ecosystem. It's hard to do this at the state level. We haven't really talked about California, but I think taxing wealth at a state level is going to have a lot of challenges because people are going to say, well, even if they're not going to move, they're going to say they're going to move. Internet, even at the U.S. level, people will say, well, there's capital flight. People are going to move. If you look at, say, Senator Warren and Senator Sanders both have wealth tax proposals now, they have a very steep exit tax, a penalty for people who renounce their U.S. citizenship to avoid tax. So protect the income tax, which is already in pretty good shape. Restore the inheritance tax, tax inherited wealth at the levels we did previously, and institute an annual wealth tax that slowly begins to chip away. And then I think you're right, Avi. You need to have treaties with other countries, with the other industrialized countries, like we've done with the global corporate minimum income tax. We could engage a whole bunch of countries in, let's all tax wealth in tandem. We're all dealing with the harms caused by extreme inequality. Let's have a minimum 2% wealth tax in all the industrialized countries. Let's have a treaty to share information, and let's do it in tandem. If we did those three things, plus enforcement, we haven't really talked about that. If we did that, you could begin to turn the corner and reduce these extreme concentrations of wealth and power in a generation.
Well, Adam, we're going to get your response to that on the other side of this break. We have a lot of comments from you to read as well, asking the question this hour, should we impose a national billionaire tax? What might that look like? Chuck kind of laid out one possibility there. Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org. Don't go anywhere. And welcome back to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolf-Manarin.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are getting two opposing views on the idea of taxing billionaires more. And there's an effort in California right now for a one-time tax on ultra-wealthy residents. And Senator Bernie Sanders introduced legislation this spring for a 5% tax on billionaires' net worth. Let me reintroduce our guests. We have Adam Michelle, Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, and Chuck Collins, a senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies. He's also author of Burned by Billionaires.
We're asking you, should we impose a national billionaire tax? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Our email is studio2@whyy.org, YouTube, Facebook, comment in the live chat. Tavoni says, we don't need new taxes if we close the loopholes they use. But if we need a new tax, it should be taxing them when they borrow against their stock holdings. So speaking of loopholes, Adam, you heard Chuck's sort of almost like an outline, right? A plan for how to create an effective national wealth tax. I wanted to get your response to that. Do you believe, I know you don't believe it should happen, but do you believe it could happen? There's a way to actually put in place a tax system that would significantly take money from the top 0.01% and redistribute it.
So again, I want to start by making sure folks understand that we already take a significant amount of revenue from the top 0.1%, for example, in America. They already pay more than 16% of all federal taxes at the state level. In a place like California, it's even more lopsided. I think it's something like half of California's revenue comes from the top couple percent of taxpayers. And so we are already taxing these people at quite high rates. If you look around the world and look at other countries who have tried a wealth tax on top of these other progressive tax systems, they tend to not work and are repealed relatively quickly. Across the OECD in the 1990s, about a dozen countries had a wealth tax, and they've been systematically repealing them because they don't fix income inequality, they don't raise a lot of revenue, they come with really high economic costs in the form of businesses closing or moving and investment leaving the country. And they're really, really difficult to administer for the government itself, with really high administrative costs. You look at the estate tax in the United States. It took the IRS and the state of Michael Jackson 12 years to come up with to agree on a value for Michael Jackson's estate. Doing that every single year for 100,000 taxpayers is prohibitive, and that's what countries around the world have found out. I think you're just magnifying the economic damage and these costs if you try to do this at the global level, creating some sort of international tax cartel and global government to impose new taxes on everyone. I think that is a terrifying prospect in and of itself, and doesn't fix any of the underlying economic problems with the proposal.
Yeah, MJ on Facebook says they do not pay their fair share in taxes, especially when you consider that the wealthy benefit way more from government services than anyone else does. Wealthy people use roads more, use the courts more, fly more, thereby using the FAA more. Wealthy people have an entire department devoted to facilitating their wealth, the Department of Commerce. That's MJ on Facebook. Chuck, I wanted to ask you, what is the ultimate goal of this? If we were to say, you know what, we want to, you know, tax, you know, billionaires more, is it about raising revenue? Is it about reducing inequality? Is it about reducing power and influence? Like, what is the actual intention and end goal?
Yeah, you know, I think if we effectively figured out how to tax these great untaxed fortunes, it would have two benefits. One is it would reduce democracy distorting power on the hands of a very few people, and it could be a source of revenue to make investments. You know, what's our vision? I would like to see a society with way more thousandaires and fewer billionaires. I disagree with Adam. I think the number of billionaires is not a measure of anything good. In fact, I think it's a measure of how imbalanced we've become. And I think about that bottom 70% of households that live in a sort of precarious state. And after World War II, again, we made all these investments. We taxed the wealthy, and we invested in public goods like debt-free education, infrastructure that benefited everyone. Affordable housing. We used to have low-interest first-time homebuyer mortgage programs. Some of my own family benefited from 1% 40-year mortgages. We did things to build and broaden opportunity and wealth and built a modern middle class. Now we're sort of pulling apart. So I think the vision is taxing wealth, restoring the progressivity of the tax code that we had 40, 50 years ago, addressing the wealth, this concentrated wealth problem, we could move back to a much more relatively equal society. And by the way, those billionaires will not suffer at all. Adam might say the economy might suffer, but actually I think having more wealth in the hands of the bottom 99% would actually have tremendous positive economic benefits.
Let me read this comment from Sean on YouTube, who says, a tax on unrealized gains would require a constitutional amendment. Taxes exist to fund the legitimate functions of government, not to achieve desired social justice outcomes. We've been talking about this, Adam, so far as an economic problem, but there is a social component, right? Which is that you've got someone, they're struggling to meet their bills. Maybe they're in medical debt. They see billionaire X with their $100 million yacht, and they think, wait a second, this society is not fair, and I don't want to participate by the rules of this society when I perceive that unfairness. Do you worry about that distortion, the distortion that it has on people's perceptions of fairness and their willingness essentially to participate in the system as designed?
I certainly worry when people have misperceive the how the system actually works. This idea, coming back to dispelling this myth that billionaire wealth is bad and that they are dominating the political system and that the solution is to simply tax away their wealth and there won't be any large costs to doing that. A lot of what Chuck was describing with a wealth tax was not putting more wealth in the bottom 90%. It's simply taking wealth from the top of the income distribution and putting it in the hands of government. And we've seen time and time again, the government is a really bad steward of our resources. They're running $2 trillion, rising onto $3 trillion deficits. They've accumulated $40 trillion debt. We're in the middle of the largest intergenerational wealth transfer from relatively young, poor working people to retired people. The Trump administration wants a $1.5 trillion military budget. I think the question, as the commenter laid out, we should be asking is, what should the government do less of, and how can we tax everyone at every income level less than we're currently taxing them, instead of just thinking about new ways to extract more resources out of the private sector?
Yeah, a listener from Upper Darby says, I would support a billionaire tax for all billionaires because in general, they all make most of their money through investments, ownership, and capital gains. The only reason they can make money this way is because laws sanctioned by the government regarding property rights, whether it's ownership of big business or stocks. You know, Adam, something you said sort of piqued my interest, sort of this idea, you know, instead of taking wealth, you know, do something to sort of make sure that people on the lower spectrum of income are able to make more wealth. How would you go about encouraging billionaires to share the wealth? Because at the end of the day, many of these billionaires own corporations. We've seen fights over wages at many of these corporations where people don't make enough money to actually afford health care. They have to go on Medicaid and be on the broader safety net versus being able to earn money from these billionaire jobs, the workforce that many of these billionaires provide to actually have a sustainable, livable life. And so what would you propose if you say, you know, government intervention is bad and taxing billionaires and taking their wealth is bad? How would you encourage them to actually share the wealth and not give higher wages to people on the lower spectrum of income?
That's a really great place to start. But I want to say that I don't think that I have the personal knowledge or anyone in government has the knowledge to know who should be earning what wage and where, how the economy should be organized. I think looking throughout history, when the government starts to presuppose they know what any particular industry should look like or how it should be organized, we see really terrible consequences. And so instead, I want the government to be getting out of the way to the extent that there's regulations that stand in the way of individuals bargaining for higher wages with their employer, we should remove those restrictions. A lot of people are concerned about the cost of childcare. In a large part, those higher costs are due to the government subsidizing demand and restricting supply in the form of requirements on certain numbers of teacher to child ratios and not allowing home businesses to be able to provide childcare. You see the same thing in the healthcare industry that we talked about. The government spends a massive amount of money and then puts all sorts of restrictions on who can work in the industry and where it can be done. At the state level, there's all sorts of restrictions on competitors setting up new hospitals and new doctors' offices. So I would remove all of those non-competitive restrictions, things that are keeping new entrants from coming into the market. And that would allow workers more bargaining power. They would have more employers to choose from, and there would be more competition in all of these sectors.
Tommy says, Reagan tax cuts, Bush tax cuts, Trump tax cuts, they all favored the rich. They talk trickle down, but nothing trickled down except less affordable housing, healthcare, food, and maintenance of family needs. So, Chuck, one thing I wanted to get to before we have to wrap up this conversation, and I'm fast forwarding a little bit here, but I think one of the critiques of this push for wealth taxes is that you're kind of obscuring the broader issue, which is that if you really want a robust social safety net, you can't fund it even with very aggressive tax on the most wealthy. You need broad-based taxes basically on everybody. I wanted you to contend with that criticism a little bit, that perhaps this becomes a distraction from creating the society that even the proponents of this wealth, these wealth taxes want to create.
Well, I think that most working people are paying substantial taxes already, particularly at the state and local and sort of the more regressive taxes, sales taxes. And the problem is we want the most wealthy people in the society to pay their fair share. And that would add to the funding. So when we taxed high incomes and high wealth in the years after World War II, we were able to make investments in things like affordable housing and home ownership. We moved from a society of 44% home ownership to 70%. We narrowed the racial wealth divide over those 30 decades after World War II. More people were able to get on the wealth building train coming out of that because we taxed high incomes and wealth, including the estate tax, and we invested in the future. And we can do that same formula again. The Nordic countries have very steep progressive taxes, and that really helps fund that fundamental social safety net. So that's, you know, I think that formula, taxing extreme wealth, investing it in things that create opportunity for everybody. Yes, you know, we've just had a tax shift for 40 years off of the feds onto state and local. The reason all of our towns are suffering with higher property taxes is because we used to tax the rich at the federal level and the feds shared revenue with states and localities. So that's a formula that we actually know, and we've demonstrated it created shared prosperity for decades.
Yeah. As we get ready to wrap up, I just wanted to get your thoughts, because we've been talking about these proposals, both in California, both with Bernie Sanders, the 5%, you know, annual tax. Just your thoughts on that and whether or not you think it'll actually provide a solution to, you know, to pay for some of this deficit we're in and actually solve some of this inequality that we're facing. And each of you, if you have about 45 seconds, Chuck and then Adam.
Yeah, I think that we have these tools. We know that having a fair tax code could move us quickly. You know, Avi started the program saying, how much is enough? And how much is too much? And when you hit that 50 million mark, not just billionaires, but that 50 million and up mark, you have too much power over the rest of us. And look at the research, look at the data, look at what's happening just since the pandemic. So I think this is having wealth taxes, having a robust debate as Adam and I, and we all are having, about is this a good idea, is a really important step for us as a society. After World War I, we taxed inheritances.
Yeah.
And that made a big difference.
Yeah.
Now we need to tax wealth.
And Adam, wanted to give you final word here.
to answer your question, no, I don't think this will fix any of the problems that you laid out. If you look at research from some of the most prominent wealth tax advocates, they find that billionaires in places like the Netherlands and Sweden, Norway, France, all pay lower taxes than billionaires in the United States currently pay. What that tells you is that the United States already has the most progressive tax system in the developed world. If you want what I think Chuck wants, and that's a much larger government with higher revenue, the way that every other country around the world does that is with higher taxes, not on the rich, but on the middle class and poor people, through higher sales taxes, through higher payroll taxes. And that's the reality. So I think as long as we're having that conversation, we're honest about what we're talking about, a bigger government is really expensive, and ultimately everyone has to pay for it. That's not the future I want, but that's the one that's being sold.
That's Adam Michel, Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Adam, thanks for your time today on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me on.
And Chuck Collins, Senior Scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies and author of Burned by Billionaires. Chuck, thank you for your time today on the program.
Thank you, Cherry and Avi, and good talking with you, Adam, as well. Thanks.
Yes, and thank you to everybody who wrote in online and elsewhere. We appreciate you. We also appreciate our producers, Debbie Builder, Hazel Mae Bryan, and Paige Marie Bessler. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calliquet engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCrory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. We'll talk to you tomorrow.